Hello, this is Denise Yon, and welcome to the Brand is Business Bites podcast. The Brand is Business Bites podcast gives you a taste of insights and information about brands, businesses, and the people who work on them. It's available on iTunes. For more stuff for your brain to chew on, please visit my website at deniseleeyon.com. Today, I'm taking a slight departure from my usual topics of business and brand building to talk about lifestyle habits. It's only a slight departure, though, because after all, the way we live our lives impacts our effectiveness as business people. And the expert who will be joining us today has had a tremendous impact on business and business people. He's Tom Rath. Tom has written 5 bestsellers in the last decade, including StrengthsFinder 2.0, which has informed my understanding about myself and others extensively. Most recently, Tom has written the book Eat, Move, Sleep, How Small Choices Lead to Big Changes, and he joins me here today to talk about the importance of the countless daily decisions we make, the bite of food to eat or not to eat, the 30 minutes that we might spend on a treadmill, decision to go to sleep a little earlier. So I'm so pleased to welcome Tom Rath.
Thanks so much. It's great to be talking with you, Denise.
Tom, in the introduction to your book, you say life itself is a big game of beating the odds. What do you mean by that?
Sure. You know, the more I've spent a lot of time personally researching what helps us to be healthy and live longer and have more energy as individuals, and also looking at this from an organizational standpoint, a lot of the businesses I spend time working with have been trying to figure out how to help employees be healthier for a long time now. It turns out that a lot of the things that ail us today and cause us to have less energy to do what we do best and shorten our lives in the larger scheme of things are the product of the choices we make more than they are a product of our genetics or our family history. It's interesting to go back and look at, if you go back to 1900, at the turn of the century, it was largely infectious diseases that killed people if you added up all the common causes. But when you look at it around the turn of this century, the year 2000, 2 out of every 3 people here in the United States die from cancer and heart disease, which are largely preventable conditions. The estimates vary a little bit, but if you were to bring those together and look at a composite, I think experts would estimate that somewhere between 60 and 75% of our risk lies in the choices that we make. So I've spent a lot of time over the last few decades researching all the little things we can do to improve our odds of living longer in good health and having more energy each day. Now, there's nothing you can do that's a silver bullet, and of course, some people will do everything perfectly and have their life cut short, and there are other people who will smoke and eat terrible food until it's 90, and you hear about that every now and then. But there are absolutely things we can do to improve our odds of living longer, healthier lives.
Okay, so I want to talk about some of those things, and actually I want to talk about an idea in each area of eat, move, and sleep. So let's start with eat. Now, your book debunks several myths about diets and dieting, including the notion that I hear a lot, which is just eat everything in moderation. That seems to make a lot of sense, but tell me, what's wrong with that, and what do you suggest we do instead?
Yeah, you know, as I've studied what's been effective and helpful with a variety of diets and research over the last decade, I think one of the big pieces of conventional wisdom that most of us still kind of adhere to on a day-to-day basis is looking at total quantity of the food that we take in, or counting calories overall. Mm-hmm. It was fascinating to me when I was looking at the research on this early on that, I mean, even if 10% of us roughly do look at a nutritional label, only 1% out of the total go beyond the headline of total calories. And of course, you can have for 250 calories, you can have a cookie that's filled with sugar, you can have a fried donut, or you can have 250 calories that's vegetables or fish or something that might be quite a bit healthier for you. So a calorie is really not a calorie, and therefore quantity, just measuring the amount of quantity you take in, I don't think it's a good measure for long-term health. Now, could you lose weight in a short-term sense by just tracking calories and just looking at quantity? Absolutely. But I would argue that's not doing what's in your best long-term interest for your health and well-being. Mm-hmm. And it's not likely to be as sustainable. There are so many people who bounce from one fad diet to the next, and I've found my own experience in talking with a lot of people that it's probably easier to build a lot of small choices into your lifestyle for good instead of worrying about the goal of 20 pounds in the next 3 months, that then you stop the diet by nature and it's likely to come back.
Right, right. I can attest to that wisdom myself. In terms of the move part of your book, actually I've been reading a lot lately that about this phenomenon that we are sitting ourselves to death. Can you tell us what your research shows on this topic?
Yeah, that might be the most alarming finding from all of the research I've been doing over the last 5 years in particular, is that, you know, I assume kind of naively that if I followed all the guidelines and worked out 30 to 60 minutes a day, 5 days a week, that mm-hmm. I'd be in a pretty good place. And I was doing that for a long time. And then maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I had the first version of it was very different from what it is today, but with those Fitbits that a lot of people wear. Mm-hmm. It's like a jawbone, mm-hmm. an activity tracking device. And I realized right away when that showed me the distribution of my time in a day that even if I had 45 minutes of vigorous activity between 7 o'clock and 7:45 in the morning, I still had 10 hours a day, roughly, sitting on my rear end, whether that was commuting to work, sitting in my desk chair writing and editing, or sitting in meetings. And now, as more and more research emerges, it's really clear that there's by no means does that hour of exercise cancel out 10 hours of sitting on your rear end in terms of what it does to your physical health. So the more I've studied this, I've had to drastically rethink my own activity throughout the day, and I've spent a lot of time helping organizations to think about how they change their environments so that, you know, we've essentially spent the last quarter century engineering activity out of our lives. So make sure that we have a printer within arm's reach and not all the way down the hallway. And we spend time circling for 15 minutes at a Target store to make sure you get a parking spot right next to the door so you don't have to walk all the way across the parking lot. And I think it's going to be neat to see over the next decade how we kind of figure out how to engineer some steps back into our day and walk around to have a meeting and take a break at lunch to get some activity. It's amazing how much more mental and physical energy you have to do the things you need to do both at work and at home when you get more activity during the day instead of kind of droning into your screen and sitting in a chair for hours on end.
Right, right. You know, recently I moved into a house that was two stories, and my office is on one level and the kitchen and living room is on another, and I thought, oh, this is going to be such a pain for me to have to walk up and down the stairs all the time. But to your point, it's actually really probably very good for me that I'm actually having that kind of activity on just kind of interspersed throughout my day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a fun time because it's, you know, I think it's a golden era of being able to track that activity. And I mean, there are so many inexpensive ways, from free apps on your iPhone to little pedometers and mm-hmm. GPS watches that tell you how much you're moving around right now. And they also, most of them allow you to compare the number of steps you're taking to your family members, your friends, or your colleagues, and that gets a little conversation going. So it's easy for me to see a solution in sight there in regards to building more activity into our daily life and then measuring it as well.
Certainly. Now, I'm someone who struggles with insomnia a lot, and so I'd like to hear your thoughts on why I might have this problem and to get your advice on how I can combat it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to me the way one of the elements that I spent quite a bit of time thinking about was, is sleep really on the same level as eating and moving? Is it? And everything I've looked at would suggest it is just as important in terms of the way it contributes to the bigger picture of our health. And of all things, sleep might be the most important contributor to being real effective in our jobs. Mm. Because when you have someone who shows up and you're in a meeting at 3 or 4 in the afternoon and you have 80% of people in the room who are sleepless from staying up late the night before and not getting a good night's sleep, that's not good for the ideas in the room. It's not good for the energy or anything else. So I think a a part of what we need to rethink is the relationship we have with our work and how that affects our sleep and vice versa. So, I mean, for many years, I know the first thing I did before going to bed was to check my email and see if there's anything urgent I need to respond to from colleagues at work. And then I roll out of bed, and first thing in the morning, what do? Check my messages again. And something that simple. What I didn't realize, I knew that those thoughts about what I need to do at work were sneaking into my head and making it tough to fall asleep, and I'd think about them when I woke up at 2 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But what I didn't understand is that simply looking at the light from a smartphone or a laptop or a television an hour before bed suppresses the sleep hormone melatonin that helps us fall asleep and stay asleep. And so minimizing things like electrical light in the hours before bed makes a real difference being able to fall asleep. So there are a lot of little things I've found and write about in the book that we can do to manage our environment so we have a better chance of getting a good night's sleep. Now, I mean, for some people you really need 6 hours, others need 8, some need a little bit more, but it's about improving the quality first and then thinking about making sure you're getting at least 7 or 8 hours.
Okay. So my last question, your book, Eat, Move, Sleep, emphasizes the relationship between eating, moving, and sleeping, and you point out that we can't just pick one of these areas to work on and ignore the others. So why is that?
Yeah, you know, that was another surprise to me when I was reading through some research where they assigned 3 groups of people. One group worked on a new eating regimen, just tried to eat better. A second group worked on a new activity regimen by itself. And then the third group was assigned to do double the workload and work on both at the same time.
Right.
And it turned out at the end of that experiment, it was the third group who worked on both a new activity regimen and a new diet and eating regimen at the same time who were more successful at each one independently. And while that surprised me, when I started to think about it in more practical terms, I mean, it's been clear from all the research I've been a part of that if you get a good night's sleep, it's like a complete reset for the next day. Wake up, you're more likely to exercise, you eat better foods in the morning. That starts an upward spiral, and each day gets progressively better. Whereas if you get a poor night of sleep, you skip the workout, you eat sugary and fatty foods in the morning, and that starts to take things in more of a downward cycle over the next few days. So those elements clearly interact, and I've been amazed as I got into the research about the interdependency there. And so the more you work on all three in tandem, the easier it is to see a lot of growth and success in terms of how well you're feeling each day. And again, it comes back to just making small little adjustments in all three of those areas instead of aiming at some big, overwhelming lifestyle change, which is intimidating to a lot of us.
Right. Well, Tom, thank you so much for sharing your research and insights with us. For my listeners and readers, if you want to be on that upward spiral, you really need to check out Tom's book, Eat, Move, Sleep. And also, I would encourage you to check out the website, eatmovesleep.org, which has tons of helpful tools and links, including one that where you can create your own personalized Eat, Move, Sleep plan. You can also learn more about Tom himself at his site, tomrath.org, and follow him on Twitter. His handle is Tom C. Rath. Thanks again, Tom. Have a great day. That's it for today. Thanks for listening to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so your brain will always be filled with good stuff to chew on. For more information or to contact me directly, please visit my website at deniseleeyan.com. Take care and thanks again.